So I was in the Guangzhou city in Guangzhou, right next to Hong Kong. And like many of the ordinary students at that time, I was not a student leader of any kind, but I also participated in the movement. And I was at the age, I was 17 years old at that time.
And what did you recall about what happened that day when the government and the military moved in?
Mm-hmm. I have to say, like, I was just a kid, like, in today's standard. Before 1989, I was not in any sense politically active or anyway, but we grow up, like, I was born during Mao's Cultural Revolution and grow up in China's open reform era. So we have this kind of idealistic sentiments about what we can contribute to the country. So I think that's one thing that's make the movement stand out is it's not like later on what we saw in Arab Spring. It's not out of anger, out of frustration, out of grievances, but it's more out of love, out of passion, and out of idealism. So that's what the Tiananmen generation was about. So to get back to my experience, I think at that time, we were just thinking that we were following the Chinese tradition of helping the rulers to improve. Like, nobody was thinking that we are going to overthrow the government in any way. So that was why when the actual massacre happened on June 4th, although I was not in Beijing, but since I was so near Hong Kong, I was able to watch all the news and things like that. And it was really totally shocked, right? Of course,
in a sense of betrayal by the government?
It was definitely the betrayal of loyalty. That's what I said in my book, the theme, because we did what we were taught. We should sacrifice for our country and the nation and the people and to help the country to be a better place, right?
And had no idea that you were risking your lives.
Yeah, so we eventually we were punished because we did what we were taught. That's what I call the betrayal of loyalty. I think it's also a trauma, an open wound for many people who live through it because justice is still not done and people are still not allowed to openly talk about it. The Tiananmen mothers cannot still not even be able to mourn their children openly, right? Exiles are still banned from returning to China. And scholars, major scholars who study Tiananmen would be regularly banned from getting a visa to
China. I read that soon after the massacre that you wore a black armband to school and
yes.
You were asked to take it off.
Yes, exactly. So I think that was almost like a turning a moment that really changed my life, right? So I went back to my school and wearing a black armband, and my teacher basically came over and said, if you do not take that off, nobody can protect you from now on.
And so you did.
I did. I cowardly did. And at first I thought, I still argue with people and I said that, you know, this is massacre. But very soon we know the arrest was happening, punishment was happening. And instead of telling people what happened or talking about it, I just, you know, recite all the what the government told us to say in exams in order to pass exams, like this is a counter-revolutionary riot and our army has successfully cracked down this counter-revolutionary riot. So I openly always said that at the age of 17, I learned to lie in order to survive.
You have a story about your father's reaction when Mao Zedong died in 1976 and the reaction to Tiananmen. You draw a parallel there and tell that story.
Yeah, so when Mao died, I was a little kid, right? So during Mao's Cultural Revolution, during the Cultural Revolution, and my father, you know, I just saw him inviting his best friend to our little, tiny little room, and he closed all the doors and windows. He brought out the only wine we had at home at that time, and they started to drink wine, and they seemed really so happy.
Celebrating his death.
Yeah, really. It feels they're very happy. And the next day, they took me to this public memorial service, and everyone was crying, and they looked very sad too. So I was really confused by the adults' contrasting facial expressions at that time, like why they were so happy the night before, right? All of a sudden, the next day, they felt so sad. But that's exactly the contrast happened in 1989, right? So we were so sad. His friends were drinking at our home again after the massacre. But outside, we could not show our sadness. So,
and you also write that even after you moved to Canada and to the U.S. and were doing research on Tiananmen, you kept that quiet. You were afraid to make that public.
I think the fear has never stopped even up to this moment, right? So, and that's exactly...
You still have family in China that
everyone,
you're worried about?
Yeah, I feel for people who are idealistic, sometimes I would feel that we are selfish too, because we choose to be idealistic, but your family members cannot choose whether they want to be your family or not. And they are the ones to have to, if you're, I myself or anyone who's the idealistic, if I am willing to pay the price, they don't have a choice because they are my family, right? So I am constantly under this kind of fear whether I would be able to go home again and what I should say, how much publicity I should do for my book, whether I should want it to be translated.
And yet here the book is. I mean, you are being courageous to have even written the book.
I always see myself a coward in that sense. I feel I do this not because I'm courageous, I'm brave. I think I do this because I still remember the fear I have to, we have to go through. And when I saw my Chinese students now coming to Harvard, and they told me either they do not want to take my course because they are scared, or they want to make sure that if they take my course, I would not make, you know, tell anyone they're taking my course. So I feel like at the best university in the world, intellectual freedom is at core of our education. And my people, like students from China, they cannot still feel that they can speak out. And that's the reason that I think is so important, that for a coward like me still want to speak out. I think it's just human nature.
You've written about the current generation in China this, quote, later generations under the effects of the patriotic campaign by the government tend not to distinguish between the regime and the nation, and they defend the Beijing government as if they are defending China itself.
I was really confused and puzzled all those years when I was studying Tiananmen, why the younger generation was so angry at me, why people would accuse me about lying, and where those anger and those nationalist sentiments come from. So that's how I started to inquire what happened to the younger generation after us. And I studied all the revised textbooks in political education and history education, and how this whole nationalistic sentiments about defending China means that you need to defend anyone who's critical of the country's government, the regime.
And yet, Dr. Hu, you have optimism about the possibility of change in China, because you've also written that, quote, on June 4th, the seeds of democracy were planted in my heart and the longing for freedom and human rights nourished. So it was not an ending, after all, but another beginning.
Mm-hmm. I think let's put it this way. I think Tiananmen may always remind us of repression, but it also symbolized people's power, and it also symbolized human beings' struggle for human rights and democracy. And as long as the desire for freedom is always humane, and the longing for basic rights is universal, I'm sure the world will witness the spirit of Tiananmen as the power of the powerless again and again. So in any country, anywhere, I believe that history is on our side.
Well, I have been speaking with Dr. Rowena Hu, who is keeping the memory of Tiananmen alive with her new book. It's called Tiananmen Exiles. Dr. Hu, it's been a privilege to have you in our studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be in Montana.